Every once in a while, we have traveling journalists who come into the studios here at WTMJ, and I heard that she was coming in. I said, we have to talk to her. She is Elena Steck, Ukrainian journalist, broadcaster. First of all, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
So, as I've talked to you before the interview, I said, I feel for your country. We can't imagine what that feels like, but you're a journalist. You're a broadcaster. You are in that world. I mean, just on its basic sense, how can you do the job given that you're in that situation in your country?
Yeah, let me start with saying that I am a journalist and a host at Ukraine's public broadcaster. So I'm mainly based in Kyiv, Ukraine, which is the capital
yeah.
of Ukraine. So I'm not the one who do the frontline reporting all the time. I had a couple of trips, but it's not my everyday work. But, you know, when I'm being asked how it is to be a journalist in the country which is at war, it is always quite difficult to answer, because I think that many of my colleagues from Europe and the United States, they expect me to say that, you know, it is so difficult to provide balance or to follow some other ethical standards. But what I think, what comes in mind for me personally at first is some very personal things. For example, I think that you might have heard that we had a pretty difficult winter in terms of electricity and heating because of the Russian missile attacks. So it influences, first of all, my work, as well as my colleagues' work, because you cannot work from home. You don't have electricity. You go to the office. We are lucky to have a pretty stable electricity in our office, but still, if it is air raid alert, we need to go downstairs to the shelter. So all of that interrupts our job.
How often does that happen? Because we see the reports. There's missiles coming in all the time, drone attacks, all these things. How often does that happen where it disrupts not just your work life, but your home life?
Yeah, so I will not say that it happens like every day, but it happens regularly. I have this application on my phone. I follow when there are air raid alerts in Kyiv. So during the last couple of days, it's like twice, three times per day. It's pretty often. So for many of us, it means that we are preferred and recommended to go to the shelter, but we can follow online what is the type of the missile attack. Is that drone attack or a missile? So how much time do we have? Is that ballistic missile? Then we don't have much time. So we decide if we see that we can stay at our workplaces, so we do this. But in general, currently the situation with electricity is much better. So also, I don't want to say that everything is bad. No, we manage. I don't know how, but the state and the providing companies, they manage to fix it pretty quickly. But in general, of course, we have this very personal dimension of what is going on. And also, I think that what is important to mention that, you know, a part of Ukrainians, they are being a military serviceman. So a lot of these people, they used to be civil people. But a lot of me and my colleagues, we have families who are now military servicemen. So this also adds this personal dimension.
There's no way right now to be a Ukrainian citizen without being directly impacted by all of this, whether it's your home life, work life. Describe, we talked a little bit about, you know, the disruption with electricity and these bombings. But even things like food, and you were talking about heating your house, all of these things are disruptive. In the United States, we're involved in wars, but not in our own country. That's the country you're living and working in, and it's happening around you. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, yes, you're right. I think that I should start with a very practical example, that what we do when there is air raid alert and, for example, a ballistic or a drone attack on Kyiv. So we are at home sleeping. What do we do? So we have like two options. Okay, we have three options. One option, you can do nothing. You can yeah. Because a lot of people, they got used to it and they're like, okay. So they're even, excuse me, becoming maybe a bit of fatalists. They're like, okay, so I'm staying. I don't want to go anywhere. Second option, which I use pretty often, I move to the hallway. You know, I have my yoga mat and a sleeping bag, right? Mm-hmm. How you say
it.
Which we use for hiking, yeah. So I put it on the floor, and I, like, this is how I sleep till the morning. Because, like, we have this rule of two walls, if you are between two walls. So this may be a bit more safer for you. The third option, if there is, like, a huge attack, missile and drone, so I go, like, downstairs to find a shelter. It's not in my house, so I need to, like, take a couple of minutes to go to the shelter. So this is a very practical dimension. And what you mentioned about electricity, for example, keeping your products safe in your fridge, you know, if we had days when there were, like, I don't know, like 8 hours without electricity, so you can imagine what may happen with your products. So a lot of Ukrainians already have, you know, this huge power banks, small power banks. I have power bank in my bag because I already got used to it, that I need to be prepared for such a crisis moments.
This is a question. It's purely speculative, but how does this war end? I mean, we've been talking about it for a long time, and we have a country that attacked your country for no reason, essentially. How does this war end?
Well, I would like to know, but I don't know. You know, from the very beginning of the full-scale war, Ukrainians and Ukrainian journalists, they asked their, for example, guests at the interviews, how do you see the end of the war? And I think that during 2022, 2023, like, there were some expectations, but now it seems something that will take some time, and we already got used to it. I think that a lot of Ukrainians had huge expectations from Donald Trump, because when he was campaigning, he mentioned that he will end the war in Ukraine in one day, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you're right.
It was pretty obvious that it won't be so easy as he said, but at least we expected that he, as the president of the United States, could pressure Vladimir Putin to stop the war, because he's the only person who is responsible for it and the only person truly who can stop it. But like what we see now, we see that U.S. president trying to make some kind of a deal, and there have been a lot of pressure to Ukraine, but not much pressure to Russia, at least as it is being, like, as we see it as observers from a side. So I think that the main thing that should be done is to put more pressure on Russia, because until it doesn't feel any consequences and doesn't feel that, for example, it feels lack of money. They don't, after the war against Iran in the Middle East, they have plenty of money again, so they can conduct war for a pretty long time. More so, like, what we expect, but I don't know if we can hope that the pressure on Russia will increase. Because, like, you know, I just want to say that there are no other people in the world who would like to end this war as quickly as it's possible than Ukrainians. Trust me. So many people dead, so many people lost their homes, so many people were forced to flee the country. And, like, when we are being listened to the statement that, like, Ukraine is an obstacle for reaching peace deal, this is very painful, because it's definitely not true.
Olena Steck, broadcaster from Ukraine, I'm in awe of you. I've only met you for about 20 minutes, but telling the story is important. I wish you and your countrymen in Ukraine the best, and I hope this war does end as soon as possible. Thanks for spending some time with me.
Thank you.